What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 93. Today, we're going to be talking about caffeine. Specifically, we're going to talk about more the performance benefits of caffeine. So what you can expect if you ingest it, you know, pre-workout and what your body does with it. And it's surprising the stuff we've learned about caffeine. So we'll go through and kind of break all that stuff down. But first, quick check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
It's been really good, man. So I don't know if it was last week or a couple weeks ago, you talked about going out to a restaurant, to an Indian restaurant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of like got me thinking, oh yeah, like that hasn't been something I've been able to do for 3 months, I guess. So me and my fiance, we went out to a hibachi restaurant. That's the place where they, you know, they like they cook food in front of you and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So me and her go there. Well, first we called just because we wanted to make sure they're open, because that's a little... It's a different type of restaurant. We don't really know what the rules are going to be there, but it was really cool. It's a really cool experience. Because of all the social distancing like regulations, you pretty much have a table to yourself. So you basically just have like a personal chef there cooking food for you, doing all the tricks, doing all the stuff you want to do, which is really cool. And like we got to decide like how we wanted a lot of our stuff cooked, because they'll use a lot of vegetable oils and stuff like that in the cooking. So we just told the guy to use butter on everything.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it was a healthier meal. It was a lot more private. I mean, because if he's cooking for everybody, then he has to kind of do the basic stuff. But, I mean, if it's just me and her, like, you know, why not?
You know, I never thought about that, but the oil they spray on there probably is some sort of, like, soy canola oil. I didn't even think of that.
It's vegetable oil, just mm-hmm. generic vegetable oil was what we were told.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, some probably soy or canola or some other
crop. Yeah, corn maybe, yeah, okay, yeah.
It was kind of pricey. We probably won't be doing that too much in the future, but it was still a nice little experience.
Okay, no, that's cool. It's nice to get back to normal life. Like, you don't appreciate that stuff until it's taken from you for months.
Yeah, and I'm not a type of person that really likes to go to a restaurant, have to wait 45 minutes, and then just be kind of like crammed. I really like having space and just kind of be able to relax, and that's how it was. There was barely anybody in there. You had plenty of room. There was no wait, nothing like that. So it's kind of peaceful.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. I'm glad you guys went out.
Yeah, so that's about it for me. What's new with you?
Yeah, honestly, not much. Same old story of my life, you know. It's just I spent a lot of time this week looking up caffeine, and like I said in the intro, just I was very surprised with what I read, because caffeine is the most widely used drug in the world. I know people don't consider it a drug, but it is, you know? And literally billions of people consume caffeine every day. And you would think that we would have the science behind caffeine down like pat. We would know exactly how it works, the mechanism of action, all that type of stuff. But when we're looking through these studies, we don't. Like, we really don't know how caffeine works. And that is just, it blew my mind. And it was honestly kind of frustrating. I know you kind of experienced that too.
Yeah, I was really kind of amazed that there wasn't more of a consensus around caffeine and that it wasn't better understood. Especially because it's not that new. Like, we've been consuming it for hundreds of years at least, probably longer than that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like you mentioned earlier, almost everybody consumes it on a daily basis. I mean, good luck being in a city and not being able to see, like, a Pete's Coffee or a Starbucks or some other sort of, like, coffee shop. Like, if you look around, they're everywhere. They're on every corner. Sometimes you'll have a Starbucks across the street from another Starbucks. Like, it's crazy how... easily accessible caffeine really is in our daily life. But yeah, like the studies around it are so just all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place. And I think, yeah, a quick just side note, we're probably going to use the terms coffee and caffeine interchangeably through the podcast. They really shouldn't be. Like, we really want to focus on the effects of caffeine specifically, because in coffee and even in something like tea where you're getting caffeine as well, there's literally hundreds of other compounds in there that can do various other things. But we're going to use those terms interchangeably, just coffee and caffeine, just to point that out.
Yeah, no, we're not the only ones who did that. A lot of the studies that we were looking at will talk about the benefits of caffeine. And then when you look at what was tested, it was one group took or drank coffee, the other group drank decaf coffee. So it's like, are they really comparing like caffeine versus non-caffeine? Are they comparing decaf coffee to normal coffee? Because those are different things of all those other compounds that you just mentioned. So yeah, like we're not the only ones who use them interchangeably. The whole scientific world is using them interchangeably.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons why you get so many mixed results, because you have these studies lumped together. Some of them do just look at caffeine, and some of them do use coffee as like a caffeine like surrogate, you know what I mean? And they think they're interchangeable when they're really not. So I think that leads to a lot of these studies where one study says yes, one study says no, and it looks like the exact same study, and you're like, well, how the hell can that be, you know?
Yeah, not everybody has all the time in the world to look through every single aspect of a study. I mean, and then do that multiple times. Like, it's really time consuming to read through these studies. It takes a lot of mental energy, because every single word is chosen and means a specific thing. So you have to really like read each like word carefully to make sure it makes sense. So yeah, it is really confusing. And there's a lot of supplements that you can take today that will have caffeine that aren't coffee. Like last time I was taking an essential amino acid supplement, I didn't realize it until after I bought it, but it had about 100 milligrams of caffeine with every serving. So it's like a cup of coffee amount of caffeine, like with all the amino acids, which is kind of good and kind of bad, because if you take that like too late at night, you might be staying up all night just realize not knowing that you just had a major dose of caffeine.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that's kind of all over the place.
All over the place, yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess just to start off with, like, kind of safety of caffeine. So, caffeine, like I said, is taken by damn near everyone. If you're a person that doesn't drink coffee, you stand out. You know, that's how, you know, common drinking coffee is or drinking tea is. So, caffeine is a very safe drug. For the most part, if you want to kill yourself with caffeine, you have to try really, really hard, even though there are, you know, cases of deaths, you know, and it seems like the lethal dose seems to be about 5 to 10 grams of caffeine administered IV or orally, the equivalent of 75 cups of coffee. So it's not like, you know, you see these people think, oh, I had 3, 4, 5 cups of coffee. Is that a problem? Like, yeah, is that a lot of caffeine? Sure. But there's no way you're going to accidentally drink 75 cups of coffee.
I mean, honestly, just hearing that, like, 75 cups of water is going to be pretty damn
very hard to drink. Yes, exactly. That's a good point.
Just that by itself. And then how much are you going to be peeing if you're drinking 75 cups of coffee? Like, I think, like, the chance of you actually dying from excessive caffeine, from just drinking coffee straight up, is probably close to impossible to do.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe it's a little bit different if you're popping caffeine pills. That might be a easier way to overdose on it, but just drinking coffee or drinking caffeinated beverages in general is going to be relatively safe.
Yeah, very safe. Yeah, and I think you can buy like kind of like bulk supplements online. So you can literally buy a bag of caffeine powder. And those are the cases where if you mess up the dosage, that can be a problem. But most people aren't doing that, let's be honest, you know, so it's not that big of a deal. But if you are out there and you are buying those type of powders, just make sure when you do the spoonful, you're using a spoon and not like, you know, I don't know, something you eat.
Like a bucket.
Like a ladle. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Like, just be cool. Like, don't be dumb, you know. If you do that, you should be fine. And yeah, to touch on real quick just how caffeine works, I mentioned in the beginning, we really don't know. There are three kind of mechanisms of action that have been studied, that have been noted in various studies, that they think kind of play into how caffeine works. Because, I mean, let's just be honest, you know caffeine works. It's a drug. Everyone takes it. They wouldn't take it if it didn't work. Like, caffeine keeps you up. It keeps you alert when you're tired. If you have a long drive ahead, a cup of coffee can literally save your life. And so there's no doubt that caffeine works. Like, I'm not saying we don't, but that it doesn't. We just don't know how. But the three mechanisms are, they say calcium release can be increased. That's one. And calcium is kind of an excitatory, I guess you call it a mineral. Would you say calcium is a mineral?
Yeah, it's a mineral.
Yeah.
I mean, calcium is basically just responsible for, if you're going to contract your muscles in any way, you need calcium to do that.
Exactly.
So that calcium release is very, very important for, like, athletic performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so calcium release is increased. The second mechanism might be inhibition of an enzyme called phosphodiesterase. And that's an enzyme that breaks down CAMP or CAMP. And that's kind of responsible for just, you can think of it like a genetic pathway responsible for the breakdown of products. So if you're dieting, like, CAMP is going to be increased. It'll increase the kind of the rate of beta oxidation and the rate of free fatty acid release into the blood. So it can kind of inhibition of that. So CAMP is around for longer. Therefore, you're releasing more of these enzymes, more of these excitatory compounds, like free fatty acids, to give your body energy. So that's the second mechanism. And
To go along with that, that would also have a lot to do with why caffeine keeps you awake.
Mm-hmm.
Is it's preventing the breakdown of stuff that would cause you to get tired.
Yeah, exactly. And then
so that's another. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's another mechanism behind it. Yeah, exactly. The third one is antagonism at the level of the adenosine receptors. And adenosine is kind of as a nucleotide. You could think of like DNA. You have A to T, and C to G. Those are like nucleotide bases that pair up. And the thing with those three mechanisms, it's kind of the results change with damn near every test. Some say the calcium like release increase helps. Some say it doesn't. Some say the inhibition of phosphodiesterase helps. Some say it doesn't. And so it's kind of, it's hard determining the mechanism of action because they just simply don't know. But what they have seen, and this is a quote, that the calcium release and the inhibition in phosphodiesterase, those both only occur at very high doses in like animal studies or in studies in like a petri dish in a lab. So the studies, I mean, the amounts required in our blood to actually have those releases like matter simply don't occur. Like, no one ingests that much caffeine. So it seems that the main mechanism of action is antagonism at the level of the adenosine receptors. That is just the kind of the best guess at this point. We really don't have hard proof, but we do know that the first two mechanisms don't occur usually in humans. So this is a quote. Mobilization of intracellular calcium and inhibition of specific phosphodiesterases only occur at high non-physiological concentrations of caffeine. The only likely mechanism of action of caffeine is the antagonism at the level of the adenosine receptors, end quote. So that seems to be the main mechanism of action, but again, like I said, we don't have hard proof. There's really not a consensus, and that's fairly frustrating.
Yeah, and just to kind of go back to something I just said a couple minutes ago, that it was the inhibition of the phosphodiesterases that break down CAMP. That's what keeps you awake. I had that wrong. It's actually the antagonism at the level of the adenosine receptors. That's what keeps you awake. When you have higher levels of adenosine in your body, that's what causes you to fall asleep, you to get tired and stuff like that. So those receptors are not being activated. Your body's not getting any signals to go to sleep. So that's how coffee keeps you awake, is it's preventing those receptors from being used.
Yeah, so that seems to be the best guess as far as how caffeine works. And I guess more studies need to be done, but I'm fairly certain that's probably the answer. And
better studies need to be done.
Yeah, better studies need to be done. That's true. Because there's a lot of studies out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And something we talked about as well, caffeine is it's big business. There's a lot of money in coffee. So you kind of have to read these studies with a grain of salt because there's just money involved in this game. You know, Starbucks is a huge company. And like you said, Pete, there's a million other coffee companies out there.
Yeah, and is this kind of new? Like, I always remember my parents drinking coffee and stuff like that when I was a kid. But when I was a kid growing up, like, Starbucks was on the rise. but I don't remember seeing a coffee shop on every single corner like I do today. Like, I feel like the caffeine consumption must have gone up, like, a lot in the last 20 years, because, like, good luck going anywhere without seeing a major coffee, like, store. I mean, like, Dutch Bros mm-hmm. are everywhere now, too, so you can have drive-thrus. Like, it's crazy how popular this drug actually is now.
Yeah, no, that's very true. So now that's kind of just the gist of it. Caffeine is safe. That's a mechanism of action. It's honestly kind of complicated, but that's our best guess. We want to really touch on, because we're both gym bros, we're both, Tom loves to run, I love to lift weights. Caffeine is something we both have used in the past. It is something I honestly take every pre-workout. I take caffeine pills. I take 100 milligrams every workout. And it's kind of a routine. Caffeine works for me. You know, I definitely feel it. I usually train very early in the morning, so having a little pick-me-up helps, especially like midway through the workout. Like, I do notice a difference. And so that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, we want to kind of just look into the exact science behind it. But for the physical benefits of caffeine, it's very similar to the mental benefits of caffeine. The answers out there really aren't known. There are studies saying it does a million things great. There's another study saying it does a million things wrong that aren't good for you. So I wanted to just read this one quote real quick. It's a conclusion from a study. And we have all these studies on the website, so if you want to read them, you can. They're not very long, but they're interesting. But this is a quote talking about the physical benefits of caffeine and some of the reasons or some of the ways it can help you. So, quote, motor unit recruitment, in addition to the reduced rate of perceived exertion and the central effects of adenosine on neurotransmission, arousal, and pain perception, are considered to be the underlying mechanisms by which caffeine can enhance performance, although the exact mechanisms remain to be fully known, end quote. So that little caveat has to be said pretty much this entire podcast. The exact mechanisms aren't fully known, but like I said earlier, we know caffeine works. There's no doubt if you drink coffee, you know if it works for you or not. So it's doing something. But the whole...
Yeah, I mean, if it's making you feel less pain, it's making your exercises feel easier... it's preventing you from getting tired. I mean, yeah, those are all major benefits of any sort of athletic endurance or athletic performance.
Yeah. And it just, there's something that has to be said is that there is a high degree of kind of inter-individual variability. And that's why I pulled those. I definitely didn't make up that sentence by myself. I pulled that from a study. But that is just like clear as day with caffeine. For some people, it really does benefit them tremendously. For other people, they can drink caffeine at 8 p.m. and be asleep by 8:30. So it really depends on just who you are. And I think by this point, you know, if you're in your 20s or 30s, or I guess, you know, even a teenager, you know if caffeine's your friend or not. And it just seems like this really depends on who you are.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of other factors at play, too. We kind of talked about this a little bit before we started recording. I'm willing to bet one major factor is how much caffeine are you drinking on a daily basis? So, like, what's your tolerance level at? That's something I would like to see studied a little bit further. Another thing is, like, does caffeine help low-carb athletes the same way that it helps high-carb athletes? And does one of them get a bigger benefit from it? We were kind of... going back and forth on that one. I wouldn't really say we're disagreeing. We just had so many questions with that topic alone. Like, wait, who would it help more?
Yeah, because I think we came at it from different angles, and I think both our angles had valid points. And but I don't know if that's ever going to be studied, but it would be interesting, you know?
Oh, yeah, I think that'd be a really interesting study, mm-hmm. especially with how popular, like, low-carb diets are. So, I mean, maybe that would be something that will come up. Yeah, I think like those are two major factors that I like to see kind of studied a little bit more.
Yeah, my angle was that because we'll touch on it in a minute, that caffeine does increase. Well, you know what? We'll touch on it later. But the one thing caffeine does is does release fat better. That's just what it does, you know? But let's touch on a few studies that really go into what caffeine does for kind of endurance athletes. Because it seems to be one of the primary ways that caffeine can help is with these races that are, you know, a couple hours long or something like you do where it's like, how long was your race? 4 hours, 5 hours, something like that?
For the first place finisher, yeah, it was like 4 hours. For me, it was about six.
Six. Okay. So for these type of races, the endurance like part of working out, caffeine does seem to help. So do you want to kind of go through a few things?
Yeah, so this first study that we're going to talk about was looking at a two-hour stationary bike. They use isokinetic as opposed to stationary bike. So isokinetic basically means they were just not moving.
Not moving, yeah.
While on a bike. And I was like, oh, that's a really interesting way of putting that, but okay, so...
No, it's the way they fucking word things that make it so exclusionary. It makes it hard for people to understand. I hate that, by the way, about science. Just the way science is written, it's very frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, because those are not words that people use in everyday language. So it makes it so like you have to have a background in science to be able to understand what these studies are saying.
Mm-hmm. When it could be just as easy if you throw a stationary bike.
Yeah.
Yeah, but whatever.
Okay, so this two-hour stationary bike ride, it was shown that it increases fat oxidation by up to 31%. That's a major, 31%, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That is very significant. You would definitely notice a very good performance boost if you were able to increase fat oxidation by 31%. Fat oxidation is basically your ability to burn fat. So you're burning 31% more fat than you would be without the caffeine. That's really significant. And then they also tested carbohydrate consumption with this as well. And if you actually looked at just caffeine by itself versus the carbohydrate by itself, caffeine showed a greater performance boost than carbohydrates by themselves, which is crazy because when I'm doing these ultra endurance races and when I'm doing these ultra marathons, there's no coffee around. You'll see coffee at maybe the first aid station. Other than that, the best source you're going to get is some caffeine might be some Coca-Cola or some other sort of soda that has caffeine added. But there is sugar everywhere.
Yeah, a bunch of gel packs, a bunch of granola, for sure.
Gel packs, granola, candy, just straight soda, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, the sugar is everywhere, but very, very little caffeine, which is kind of surprising. I mean, at the starting line, you see half of the people out there drinking coffee. So people kind of have, like, people know that, but they would have been drinking coffee if they weren't running a marathon that day. So they weren't really putting those two, they weren't connecting those dots.
Yeah.
And the combo of carbs and caffeine did have the best outcomes, but the study did not mention if the participants followed a low-carb or a high-carb diet. So if you're following a high-carb diet, consuming some carbohydrates while you're exercising will be beneficial, especially in a two-hour race. But if you're following a low-carb diet, consuming those carbs during a two-hour race probably isn't going to give you that much of a benefit. So I kind of wish they would have gave a little bit more information on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect them to, but it'd be nice if they did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think I'm just being picky with that one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just asking for too much information.
Yeah.
So another study, this was, I wouldn't really consider this to be endurance, but it is what it is.
Hey, in today's world, it is, bro. Trust me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely not power or strength. So, I mean, I guess it would fall into the lines of endurance. So, it's looking at a 1,500-mile run. And 1,500-meter run, which is about a mile. So, it improved the running time in all the participants. And they also had another part. For the final minute, they were supposed to do, like, a kick, which is like a sprint, basically, or as fast as you can go for a minute. And it improved the speed in the final minute of that same race. So it improves your running time overall, and it also improves your speed at the end of a race. So that is a sign of endurance if you're able to go farther.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And then a couple other studies mentioned that it lowered the rating of perceived effort. We talked about that earlier. And basically the major benefit seems to come from is that caffeine consumption increases fat mobilization and fat oxidation, and that benefits endurance athletes a lot by not only better utilizing an abundant fuel source, that's fat, it also spares muscle glycogen. So those runners that had that final kick, what they were able to do for that final kick, that 5-minute sprint, is they were able to tap into that muscle glycogen. That's what it's there for, is when you need to sprint. And since they were sparing that muscle glycogen because they were using all that fat, they had more of it there. If they used up all that muscle glycogen during the first half of that mile and had very limited supplies for that final minute, that's their speed would be much, much lower. So that's where caffeine has its major benefits. You're better able to use fat, and it spares that muscle glycogen.
You know, in a weird way, it's pretty much caffeine turns someone who's a sugar burner into like a fat burner. It gives them some of the benefits of being a better fat burner without them going on like a low carb diet for a few months.
Yeah, definitely. I connected those dots almost immediately when I read that. I was like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. So everything that I'm trying to do by you being a ketogenic athlete, doing all my fasted training, caffeine just kind of gives you a little nudge in that direction.
Yeah, it kind of hacks it a little bit, yeah. And even the lowered like rate of perceived effort, that's something that we've talked about it. I'm not sure when. We've talked about so much stuff at this point. Maybe when we talked about the combination of like what's a cleaner fuel source, fat or carbohydrates, but there is, like if you're in a race, whatever, say it's 50 miles, you're at like mile 35 and you're feeling kind of gassed out, you know, you're just burnt up. If you drink, say, a Coke or you have like a sugar powder, you will fairly instantly feel better. And it's not necessarily, people think, oh, sugar, your body's burning sugar. It's like, no, your body's not burning sugar that fast. Like, it still takes a few minutes for you think that everything to get in your stomach. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes for your stomach to even dump stuff in your small intestines before your body really utilizes the carbohydrates for energy. But what it does is it decreases your perceived effort in your brain. And that's where you get like that second wind feeling. So caffeine is able to do that very similar to carbohydrates. So it's, that's a kind of nice little trick, you know, like your brain is really the limiting factor on a lot of these extreme endurance races. Your body's going to just tell your brain to shut down, you know, or yeah, vice definitely. Versa. Sorry, vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely makes it so that you'll hit that wall much, much later on. And yeah, just to piggyback on what you were just saying, you don't even need to drink that. If you just like slosh some like Gatorade or some other sort of like sugary beverage in your mouth, and then you spit it out, you will still feel better from doing that, and you'll still delay central fatigue. But you don't even need to consume it. Just giving your body, basically tricking your body into thinking that you're consuming sugar is enough for you to do that.
Yeah, that's actually a nice little trick that people, you know, athletes do that. They know they can do that. So, yeah, that's something they can do.
Yeah, I used to do that a lot when I was, like, cutting weight for wrestling, like, in high school. Is okay, I feel like crap, my mouth is super dry, I just feel dehydrated, let me go either I'll brush my teeth just to kind of get my body like tricking into thinking I'm drinking water, or just put some water in my mouth, slosh around, then spit it out. I mean, I wouldn't do this every single day, this was like the last couple hours of right before I'd weigh in, but yeah, it totally helps.
Yeah 100%. So the other angle for this is kind of the strength and power angle. So there's no doubt that caffeine does benefit endurance athletes, and that really, like we said, revolves around just better utilization of fat. But the whole strength side is a little more kind of iffy, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, the first thing I put in my notes for this was, who knows?
Because it seems like no one does. Why don't you run through it?
So looking at a meta-analysis from, this is going on for 69 years, from 1939 to 2008. It looks at over 34 studies, and it showed that caffeine improved the strength for knee extensors, which are your quads. However, there is no benefit for knee flexors, which are your hamstrings, or your forearms. So what does this mean? Well, like if you actually look at the conclusion of the study, they concluded that due to the better or the increased fat oxidation, that led to better strength output for your quads. That doesn't really make any sense to me, because your quads, yeah, they do have a lot of mitochondria. Your mitochondria is what's responsible for burning fat. So yes, your quads have a lot of mitochondria. They would benefit from having more fat around.
But so would your biceps. More. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Your hamstrings have a lot of mitochondria. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same with your forearms. Like if it was comparing pecs to quads, that'd be a little bit different, because your pecs, I mean, if you're just thinking of this as like chicken, your pecs are your white meat. They're white because they don't have all that those mitochondria to darken them up, versus legs have all that mitochondria. That's why legs is like dark meat when you're talking about chicken. That would be a better comparison and would make sense for the fat oxidation conclusion. But I really have no idea why your quads would be stronger, why your hamstrings and your forearms would have no effect.
It just seems like it's a limitation of the study, and they just drew a conclusion, but I just don't agree with it. Yeah.
See, that's, I was thinking that too. That's the same thing I came up with, except that this is a meta-analysis looking at 34 different studies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more confusing, but since it is very, very cloudy, if there's any sort of benefit, and the one mechanism that they kind of suggested doesn't really seem to stack up very well, I don't think there's any benefit, or if there is a benefit, it's not going to be much of one at all when it comes to strength and like power events.
Yeah, I don't personally like rely on caffeine thinking like, oh, I'm going to take this pre-workout and my bench is going to go from 315 to 405. That's not something I think about. I more rely on caffeine for the fat oxidation and also for the just energy and like the decrease in like mental fatigue. Like just getting the workout done sometimes is hard as shit and you just need a little boost. That's where caffeine comes into play in my mind, and I think for most people's minds, the idea that caffeine can actually make you stronger, I don't buy into that, and it looks like the studies support that. And I think the decrease in perceived effort can help maybe if you're, you know, feeling less pain on the eighth rep, then maybe you can go for 9 and 10. So in that sense, would you be stronger? Yes. But I don't think that is something you should rely on. I don't think it's something you should bank on. That kind of just depends on how you feel that day and how the caffeine is hitting you that day, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It seems like, yeah, caffeine can, I guess, give you the energy, make you more alert, more make you more awake. So maybe you are getting, I don't know, you're putting in, like, better quality reps or sets, especially towards the beginning of your workout. And with that decreasing your perceived effort, that would definitely help you out a lot towards the end of your workout.
Yeah.
Like if you feel like you're gassed, then you're either going to half-ass your like last exercise where you might even skip it altogether.
You'll just stop. But, yeah.
Yeah. But if you feel like you're 100% still, you're going to be pushing through that workout all the way. So in that sense, like I do see how it can be beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, but then again,
but I also think there's other ways to achieve the same thing. Generally just like working out and warming up in general will make you pretty awake even if you weren't already. I mean, you're basically trying to put yourself in a fight or flight scenario, and your body should wake up if it thinks like it's about to wrestle a bear.
Yeah.
Like if your body thinks it's going to die, it's going to respond full force.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, there are other ways to do it. Even listening to music that can almost act just like a cup of coffee. If you get the right song at the right time, it can also decrease perceived effort and make you push harder. We all know that if you've been in the gym. The right song at the right time can be better than any pre-workout.
Oh, yeah, totally agree. So as far as, like, strength and power, I don't feel like caffeine's giving you any benefit unless that's what it takes for you to get your ass to the gym or to get your ass to lift the weights in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. No, great point. So the third thing we want to touch on, we touched on a little bit earlier with the endurance, is just overall fat loss. And you're going to notice if you ever, me and Tom both used to work at GNC, so we know a little bit about supplements, even though that was like 15 years ago. So I don't know if hydroxycut is still like the fat burning thing out there, but it was when we were selling these things, you know, hydroxycut was like the best one, or at least the most popular one. And you're always going to see that they have a high dose of caffeine in these fat supplements. And you would think it's kind of BS, but there really is some science there. Like, caffeine and fat loss is a thing.
Yeah. Honestly, when it comes to fat loss, the information, the studies revolving around fat loss is the most frustrating part because you really have to know the language and have to know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of studies, especially if it's coming from like a hydroxycut or some other supplement that's going to promote that, the fat burning ability of caffeine, mostly what it's going to show is that caffeine increases fat mobilization. So fat mobilization just means that your body's putting more fat in circulation for you to burn it. So if you just have more fat around, yeah, you could be burning it, or you might not be. So caffeine doesn't increase how much fat you're burning, it just increases how much fat is around.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's that is such a kind of subtle distinction that no like drug company or no supplement company will ever distinguish, but it means the world of difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because what they're able to do is, hey, our drug, our pill increases fat mobilization by 50% or some other crazy
claim
that they
can make. Yeah.
Which is could be true, and it sounds very promising, but just having more fat around doesn't mean you're burning it and doesn't mean that you're going to be shedding all this fat and all of a sudden you're going to have a six-pack from taking this drug. Like, no, that's not how that works. So fat oxidation is what really matters, and that's where you're actually burning that fat. So having all that fat mobilized and not doing anything with it is basically just pointless. So you need to increase your fat oxidation as well as increasing that fat mobilization. You need to do both of them to really lose a lot of body fat.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if you take, say, we'll just keep using hydroxycut as the example. Sorry if it's super outdated. I bet it is. But, like, is that even a thing anymore? I don't know.
I don't even look here. Let me Google fat loss.
Google fat loss up and see what pops up first. If it's hydroxycut, I'll be impressed. I doubt it is. There's no way it is.
Top 10, Razzoline.
Yeah, see, I've never heard of Razzoline.
What is
that shit? I don't know what that is.
OxyFex, Keto Scorch.
Okay, yeah, so a bunch of BS supplements, yeah. So, the thing is, like, if you consume caffeine, either just a coffee or one of these diet pills, and you don't do anything, like, you sit in a car for an hour, or you sit at your desk for 3 hours, the fat mobilization won't lead to fat loss, because you're not increasing fat oxidation. So, yes, you'll have more increased fat in your blood, but all that fat will just get redistributed around your body. It might even go back to the exact same cells it came from. So you're not actually increasing fat loss unless you're putting in the work to burn more energy. So unless you're doing cardio, unless you're lifting weights, unless you're going for a walk, something like that. So if you're doing those things, if you're actually working out, caffeine or these diet pills will increase fat loss 100% because you're increasing fat mobilization. You're turning yourself into a better fat burner, just like we said earlier, just like if you're a low-carb athlete. But if you're taking these caffeine pills or these diet pills and not changing anything about your lifestyle, don't expect to lose fat because you won't.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great point. And yeah, when you look at studies between coffee or caffeine and fat loss, like, they're so misleading. I'm so glad you cleared all that up. Mm-hmm. And this might make you feel better. Hydroxycut was the number 10 sold fat burner last year.
There we go. Still top 10. Okay, so I'm not that old yet. Okay.
Hydroxycut Ultra.
Ultra. So they upgraded the name a little bit. Okay.
So there must have been like a super in between there, maybe like a mega hydroxycut.
Oh, hydroxycut X.
Some other like three iterations in which we were working there now.
Yeah, a couple of Norman Rumble, something like that. Yeah, for sure. So there are some side effects of caffeine, and you experienced these you've talked about just recently, right?
This is a big one, especially because we're talking about athletic performance. So one thing that caffeine does is a lot of people, it makes you pee more. So if you're going to be peeing a lot more, that means not only greater loss of just like water, but then electrolytes as well. So if you are doing some 3 hour, 4 hour running event, something like that, where you're already sweating a lot, you do not have water. You do not have electrolytes to be losing through any other means. So yeah, you might want to be drinking more salt shots or just be aware of your electrolyte and fluid balance in general if you do notice that you pee a lot more when you drink coffee.
And that's going to come back down to kind of the I forget the words they use, how just caffeine affects us all differently. For some people, they don't notice it. For some people, the effects of increased urine output decreases, you know, their body gets very used to it within a week or two and that stops. But for other people, it doesn't. So like Tom said, just be aware. If you are one of those people that you notice you have to go to the bathroom way more often when you drink coffee, replace some of those electrolytes and you should be okay.
Yeah, so this is something that I've experienced like personally is I used to wake up every morning, do a salt shot with a glass of water. That's how I'd start every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 2 hours later, I'd have a cup of coffee. And then like the next 2 hours, I'd be peeing every 30 minutes. So it's just like, all right. So eventually I was like, let me just stop drinking the water. And as soon as I stopped having that glass of water, it wasn't even that big of a glass of water, I stopped peeing. Like I just stopped altogether. So I was like, okay. It must have just been like that extra water that I was consuming that made it so it was extra. Or it could just be that I'm more adapted to caffeine by now. But I mean, who really knows?
Yeah,
I mean, it could be a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just kind of just be aware of how caffeine affects you if you are going to be using this as a performance booster.
Yeah, for sure.
Another thing that this happens to a lot of people, I mean, especially if you're maybe taking some caffeine pills like on an empty stomach, or just you're not used to caffeine, is it can cause an upset stomach. And I mean, hey, my last race, I think that probably added about 30 minutes to my time, just because for a solid like hour or so, like my stomach was hurting so bad. Like I was trying to run to a bathroom that was 10 miles away. Like that's not that easy to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, like that will completely derail any athlete. I mean, unless you're Michael Jordan and you can just have your flu game.
Yeah.
yeah. Like I'm not trying to have an upset stomach while I'm out there running.
No, me either. 100%.
And this is a big one, especially if you're using this, not so much for competition, but for your training, is it can cause problems sleeping. So if you're somebody that works out after you get off of work at like, you know, 7 o'clock at night, drinking caffeine before you do that, or if you do like your night runs, something along those lines, drinking caffeine right before you do that, it's probably going to have a very, very impact, very large impact on your sleep, and in not a good way. You're going to be staying up all night, something like that. Sleep is when you recover. Sleep is so important for everybody. It's even more important for athletes. So you don't want to be taking anything that's going to disrupt your sleep. That's so counterintuitive.
Yeah. So the two things that came through clear looking at these caffeine studies was caffeine increases fat mobilization. That is for sure it does. And another thing is that caffeine increases anxiety and increases or decreases sleep quality if taken at night. So those two things came through clear as day. So if you, I know there's some people out there who can take caffeine very late and be fine, but for the vast majority of people, you probably shouldn't consume caffeine after about 5 or 6 o'clock, because it will keep you up and it will reduce your quality of sleep. And like Tom said, that is really the most important thing, especially for athletes, because we're just prone to break down our body 24/7. It's just in our nature. We train when we're not supposed to. We push our bodies when we're not supposed to. So we have to recover or we'll never get better.
Yeah, I mean, recovery is what it's all about. I mean, most of the, we're talking about a bunch of supplements, like we're doing a little series on it, and half of them are going to be about like improving your recovery. The other half are going to be about improving your like performance itself. So like, yeah, recovery is so, so important, so vital.
Yeah.
And with you, what you said, like 5 to 6 p.m.?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say like even earlier than that. I mean, there is a lot of individuality when it comes to that. I would be thinking somewhere around like 12, maybe 3, somewhere like that, depending on what time you go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the earlier you can stop consuming it, the better.
The better. Yeah, that's a good recommendation. Yeah. So we do have a few recommended uses. You want to run through those? Because, I mean, it's pretty broad.
Yeah. So this one is wait at least 90 minutes after waking up to consume like either coffee or any other sort of caffeine. One thing that caffeine does that we didn't really touch on earlier is it activates your sympathetic nervous system. It just increases stuff like epinephrine through your body. So that's going to keep you awake. But a lot of those same things happen just when you wake up in general. Like your body's going to do a lot of the same processes that caffeine's going to do. So if you wake up in the morning and you go straight for your coffee, your body's going to be relying on that coffee so much more than if you were to wait 2 hours. Because then your body would have practice at waking itself up, increasing cortisol, increasing that blood glucose, and just kind of waking you up in general. So like if you wake up and you go straight for that cup of coffee, and there's one day that you do not have that coffee, oh man, I do not want to be around you.
It's going
to
be rough.
Yeah, you're going to be tired, groggy, grumpy, just everything. So yeah, just try and give yourself a little, I think 2 hours is good, but at least 90 minutes to give your body a chance to wake up itself, you know, with those natural processes, do what they're designed to do.
Yeah, I think that's a good tip. I don't think anyone will listen to that, but I think it's a good tip. So yeah.
Yeah, that's something I've been doing for the longest time. I've been trying to get my fiance to stick to that too. She doesn't really listen. I think she gives it about an hour. For the most part.
I mean, it's better than most. Yeah. But, you know, most people just, they wake up 30 minutes before work. The first thing they do is start their coffee. And as they walk through the door, they're drinking their coffee. That's just most people's routines.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. But yeah. Got to throw out that recommendation anyway.
For sure. Yeah.
Another thing, so if you are going to use this for activity, depending on your, like, the length of that activity, you want to take it, like, 60 minutes before the activity. I mean, if you're doing something like a five-hour, like, run, something like I do, taking it 60 minutes before doesn't really matter because you want that caffeine in you for as long as possible. You can drink it while you're doing the activity. But if you're doing something a little bit shorter, maybe like a two-hour activity, two-hour like sporting event, then you want to take about 60 minutes so it has time to enter your body, let that fat get mobilized, all those processes to go to do their thing to give you that performance boost.
Yeah, that's something I actually try and do myself is I've started consuming some carbohydrates pre-workout right in the morning, and I give myself, and I take the caffeine as well, and I give myself about 45 minutes to an hour before I actually start working out, so the caffeine's in my blood, and it's actually, like Tom said, the fat is mobilized, and now it's time to use it. Because I see a lot of people, you see especially on YouTube, like people, gym bros, they take their pre-workouts like during their first set pretty much. And I'm like, man, by the time you're done working out, that's when all this stuff is really kicking in. It's just, it's not smart timing.
Yeah, and by doing that, you're also, like, really confusing the hell out of your body. You're telling your body to digest food better while feeding your muscles at the same time, which your body cannot do. It can either feed your muscles or it can feed your digestive system. It cannot do both, or at least not efficiently.
It's not optimal, exactly.
Yeah, so giving yourself an hour, 45 minutes, something along those lines, lets you go, digestive system, okay, that's all processed, now I can dedicate myself fully to working out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's true with pretty much any sort of thing that's going to require some sort of digestion.
Exactly, yeah, even like a pre-workout meal, you want to give yourself time to digest it. That's why, like, mine is just a protein powder with a protein, I mean, like a carbohydrate mix with some creatine as well and salt. So it's all very fast digesting. So after about 45 minutes, my body's already run through it. If I was actually having like a full meal, I would most likely wait a couple hours, but that's different.
Yeah.
But another recommendation that came up with one of these studies, which I thought was actually very good, was our body, there's no doubt it gets used to caffeine. So the effects kind of diminish over time. And one of those effects that diminishes is the release of free fatty acids, the literal amount that it affects us. So if you want to kind of have the most access to fat for an event, so if you're prepping for a big race, it might be smart to stop caffeine maybe 4 or 5 days, even a week prior to the event, so your body can desensitize to the effects of caffeine. And then on race day, you reconsume the caffeine that you used to, you know, whatever dose you were at, and that will affect you just like the first time. So you'll get more fat release and more benefit, more performance improvement on actual race day when it matters. You know, when the times matter, you want to feel your best.
You know, that is such a great recommendation. It's so simple, but not a lot of people are even going to, like, think about doing something like that.
Yeah.
And that's not a very popular recommendation. But, like, I absolutely love that. That's not something I've been incorporating, but I definitely will for my next one.
Yeah, I thought it was great. When I read that, I definitely highlighted that section right away. I thought that was very smart.
Yeah. Another recommendation I've heard that's similar to that is basically, like, either once a month or every few months, go like 1 week without drinking coffee or tea, whatever your caffeine usage is. And it's basically just a way to keep your body sensitive to the caffeine. But I've tried that. It's hard.
Very hard.
It's hard to just go cold turkey on the caffeine. So going 4 to 5 days prior to a big event, that's super easy to do. You should be locked into that anyway. So yeah, that's a great recommendation. And one thing I could think of just to make that easier, if you are used to drinking coffee every morning or tea, is to still do that ritual, but just drink either decaf coffee or some sort of decaffeinated tea. So you're not really messing around with a whole bunch of different, like, routines.
You're still going through the motions. Yeah, exactly.
So this one we just talked about with the side effects is that increased urine output means greater loss of electrolytes. So increase your electrolyte consumption while you're drinking caffeine. I mean, especially if you're going to be somebody that's peeing a lot, make sure you're drinking some sort of electrolytes with some sort of water. And this is such a big one, is experiment with it before your competition. Like, you should always, your competition should never be a first for anything. That's what practice is for. You should be practicing with all sorts of different things, all sorts of different scenarios, foods, stuff like that. So just know, if you've, if you have the biggest game of your life and you've never drinking a cup of coffee before it, that today is not the day to do it. Wait for a different time.
Don't do it today. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like try it in practice or something like that. I made that mistake. I know better. I know not to do that.
Yeah, you know
and
better.
I did that anyway in my last race.
Yeah, you know better.
Yeah, like I preach this all the time. I try to practice it as much as I can. But hey, you know, some trail mix. It looked good. I was hungry. I ate it.
It happened.
Made a mistake.
Yeah.
You live and you learn.
For sure. Yeah.
And then, yeah, we just talked about this too. Caffeine has a half-life of about 5 to 6 hours. So you should stop consuming it. I think 8 hours prior to bedtime kind of depends. And a half-life just means that if you drink a cup of coffee at 12, at 5 or 6 p.m., about half of that caffeine that was in that cup of coffee is still in circulation. That's still a shit ton of it. Five, 6 hours later, it's still there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even if you do metabolize coffee pretty good or caffeine pretty good, you're not burning through it in an hour or two. Like, that stuff lasts for hours on hours, which is great because that's why everybody loves it so much. But if you're trying to sleep, not really the best thing.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why you say you should stop taking it, like maybe add 8 hours before bedtime.
Yeah, and if you are somebody that has problems sleeping, just like you stay up all the time, that might be something you should be looking into. It's like, when is your last cup of coffee? Because you'd be surprised of how many people can just play with that one little thing and it greatly improve their sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true. So yeah, that's kind of some of the recommendations. You can kind of just take those as you will. Try and follow them if you can. If you do, or you're the type of person who does train for specific events, or you know, you're this athlete out there, try and mess around with your caffeine prior to, and I think that'll help with your event. And just in conclusion, really, it seems that endurance athletes can benefit from caffeine due to increased fat mobilization and oxidation, a decrease in RPE, which is just your perceived effort, and sparing of muscle glycogen. So for those three mechanisms, caffeine really helps the endurance athletes, and that's huge. There's really no doubt about that. So we know caffeine works, and that's how it does it.
Strength and power athletes may benefit from caffeine, but the evidence is kind of all over the place. And while all those factors that help endurance athletes, they do play a role with like strength and power athletes as well. Just that role is so much smaller that you might not even notice any of those benefits. I mean, the greatest one would be a little bit of sparing of muscle glycogen and that decreased rates of perceived effort. But I mean, if you're doing a 30-minute event or if you're Usain Bolt doing a 10-second event, you're not going to notice.
Yeah, you won't notice it at all. Yeah. And so caffeine does increase fat mobilization, no doubt. But unless that fat is oxidized, which means unless you're actually burning it, then that fat will just be stored again and will not result in fat loss. So you can't just take a fat loss pill and do nothing and lose weight. It's not how it works. So, and that's something that doesn't get talked about.
Definitely not. And that was like the biggest thing that I wanted to talk about with caffeine is I'm glad we did this because I was really kind of curious because like we talked about earlier, how the evidence is just all over the place on who it helps and how it helps them. But with in regards to like that, the fat burning potential of caffeine, it's potential. It does have the potential to burn a lot of fat, but it's not going to do it unless you put that work in to burn that fat.
Yep. Yeah, it's not just like that magic pill that, you know, if you read those labels on like those fat loss supplements, you would think it's like the magic bullet, but it's not.
Nope. And yeah, like hopefully this clarifies some things and you're not going to be tricked into buying that Hydroxycut Ultra or any of those other caffeinated fat loss supplements. And hey, if you do want to take one of those, just know that the next thing you should be doing after you take that is going on a walk, going on a run, going to the gym, doing something along with it.
Yep.
Like that's exactly the only way you're going to get benefits of the caffeine is if you take that next step and do the exercise.
Yep, exactly. And I know a lot of people won't want to hear that, but it's just the truth, you know? And but yeah, so that's all we really want to touch on with caffeine. I think it's great, honestly. Like it's a supplement that I use all the time. I don't use too much. Like I said, I only use 100 milligrams, which is a pretty low dose. A lot of people rely on a lot more, but 100 milligrams for me is plenty to help me through my workouts. And just increasing fat mobilization, I think, is great. You know, like, everybody wants to be lean. So if you do that, you work out, it'll be good. And it helps with mental fatigue. It's very safe for the most part, unless you're going to drink 75 cups, which I definitely don't do that. But, yeah, so that's all I really want to touch on. Did you want to say anything else, or you think we covered it good?
No, I think that's about it. I don't really have anything else to add. Just fat mobilization does not equal fat oxidation. So, yeah, just because you're moving around that fat doesn't mean that you're burning it.
Yep. Well, all right. Well, that's another podcast in the books. Thanks for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, and if you haven't already done so, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. If you have already done so, thank you. Please urge your friends to do the same thing. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.